Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulippe. Today, a talk with Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright and MacArthur Genius Grant recipient Susan Laurie Parks about the ACD production of her new play, Father Comes Home from the Wars, Parts 1, 2, and 3. Also stopping by, Artistic Director Celia Fuchile from Smuin Contemporary American Ballet to share details about the upcoming Dance Series 2, which includes choreographies by Helen Pickett, Amy Seiwert, and the world premiere of If I Were a Sushi Roll by master dancemaker Val Canaparoli. From the San Francisco Girls Chorus, we'll talk once again with music director Valerie Santagat to discuss their involvement in the Kronos Festival 2018, which gets underway tonight and concludes on Saturday with a concert by the San Francisco Girls Chorus with the Kronos Quartet. Plus, I caught up with German conductor Christian Reif right after rehearsal for his upcoming concerts with the San Francisco Symphony of Music of Holst, Liszt, and Wagner. All ahead here on Open Air. Stay with us. It's not often that one gets the chance to have in studio a Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, but to have one who's also awarded a MacArthur Genius Grant should make for an interesting, if perhaps humbling, conversation. Well, I did win a concerto competition back in undergrad in 1987. Oh, and she's also a terrific guitar player, which we'll hear, who composed the soundscape for the play. Susan Laurie Parks' powerful new drama, Father Comes Home from the Wars, Parts 1, 2, and 3, just opened last night at ACT's Geary Theater for a run through May 20th. It's set in the American Civil War and inspired by the Odyssey. And the dilemma presented revolves around the slave hero who must either fight for the Confederacy and earn his freedom or stay with the woman he loves and remain enslaved. Susan Laurie Park, welcome to Open Air.
Oh, thanks for having me, David.
Thanks for taking the time. I understand you just got in town, too.
I did. We just came in yesterday, really.
Fantastic. Well, the story sounds, as it stands, compelling and drama-full. So how did Homer's Odyssey work its way into your creative process?
Homer's Odyssey, along with a couple of other major gorgeous works of literature, the Oresteia, which also features, you know, some people, some war happening, the Trojan War, and someone coming home, Agamemnon, and also the Mahabharata is in there too. So and also a little bit of August Wilson's Fences.
Wow.
If one listens very closely, you can hear the name of one of his characters. So all those stories to me always were in the, we could say, the groundwater of our lives, you know? We just like our bones and our ashes are from years ago. We could say our ancestors are still with us, you know.
And these stories are timeless.
Exactly. So when I just started talking and telling myself about the story of my father who was in the service, and one of the recurring themes, if you will, like a piece of music, one of the recurring themes in my life was watching my dad come home from war.
Where was that?
Before I was born, he was in Korea. He had a tour of duty in Korea, the Korean War, or conflict, rather. Interesting what's going on in Korea these days. And then, of course, he was in Vietnam. He had two or three tours of duty in Vietnam. He was ROTC in college, you know, because back then serving in the military, because they just integrated the military, was a way that he figured he could get a fair shake in this country, like so many service people today join, trying to get a fair shake. Anyway, so he ended up having two or three tours in Vietnam, and he was coming home. And so I started telling myself that story, which was very basic to my growing up.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, my father, I think, had kitchen duty in Illinois in the 50s.
Oh,
and that's how I became a radio announcer and you became a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Wait a minute.
Genius,
how did you
stories.
Get from the kitchen to the radio?
Well, family stories.
Okay. Well, it's just, you know, the stories are so, I mean, you know, you hear about these stories from, we hear about these stories from our parents and then we try to unpack them in our adulthood. And so as I started unpacking the story of my dad, all these myths that I'd been, you know, that we hear about every day in our that are so much a fabric of our lives, just were attached to it somehow. The Odyssey, the Mahabharata, the Oresteia, fences.
And so connecting this to the American Civil War and the story of the slave hero, how did that germ form?
That's the writing process for me, which is very simple and matter of fact. I.e., every day I sit down and lean into it. So it's very simple, mm-hmm. and at the same time, it's completely mysterious. That I just listen, like Faulkner said, I listen to the voices. So there he was. In this conundrum, and I was just bearing witness to it and following the leads of the characters, you know.
This is a co-production with Yale Repertory, Liz Diamond, their resident director, directing this production. Is that where the show was workshopped and fine-tuned?
No. We started years ago, 2009, with Joe Bonney, the original director at the Public Theater, where I'm the master writer chair. So we started there. I had written one of the parts. We workshopped it. Oscar Eustace, artistic director of the Public Theater, loved it, said, you got to do it. Let's do it right away. And I said, nah, I want to write a couple more parts just to give it a little bit of traction.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew it was a long, 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 long story that I was trying to tell. So I said, let me write a little bit more. Then we'll put it on stage, and so I wrote a little bit more. We put it on stage. We premiered, I think, in 2014. I think.
Mm-hmm. So not only the writing process, but the composing process, we should talk about, as you compose the soundtrack for this work.
Yes.
Why don't we hear some of the music since you so kindly brought your guitar into the studio?
I brought my little guitar.
Let's hear something from. Father Comes Home from the War is now part one, two, or three. Is this from?
this is from part two, I think. Just to give you a little bit of the backstory about the guitar playing. The very first workshop production, I was on stage. I was actually in the play, on stage, sitting on stage, playing, doing the soundtrack every night with the actors, and taking notes because we were in workshop. I was taking notes to give the actors after we finished. But since then, I've, you know, decided that it's best to hire fabulous, wonderful musicians to do this part. This is from part two. It happens at the end of part two, and it's called This Bright Wilderness.
Susan Laurie Park, live in KLW Studios.
God is in his heaven. Up above, up above, while we toil bravely down here below. In the midst of this most fearful day, let us count our many blessings. In the midst of this bright wilderness, let me see a light I know. In the darkest of the darkest night, there is still a day that comes all right. God is in his heaven, up above, while we toil bravely down here below. When the road is long and the eye is weak, let us hope the heart is merry. Let us keep on keeping on, you know. Let us cherish all we carry. And when the thick is thin and the plenty ends, it'll be as it has always been. God is in his heaven, up above, while we toil bravely down here below.
God is in his heaven, up above, up above, while we toil bravely down here below.
Beautiful singing and writing by my guest, Susan Laurie Parks. That's amazing writing. That's really beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. It's just, you know, it's the conflict in that part of the play where the character, the idea that, you know, God's up there in his heaven while we are down here working. And that's the main character hero is really wrestling with where his place is and what is he to do with all these difficult questions he's got to answer and wrestle with. So.
Sure, and that's something that one at a specific time and place, that reliance on there's got to be something beyond what I'm experiencing right now.
Right, right, right.
That's getting
right.
us through right now.
Exactly.
Now, the title I want to mention again, that the full title is Father Comes Home from the Wars, Parts 1, 2, and 3.
Yes.
Why did you include Parts 1, 2, and 3 in the title?
Yeah. I mean, they're Parts 1, 2, and 3.
Well, I know.
Because there's more. There's
you don't
more.
Say Hamlet, this is Hamlet, Acts 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, no. Exactly. So. But if Hamlet had a... but we do say, what is it, Star Wars,
you know,
because there are many, or Henry the Sixth, parts one,
three.
Two, and three.
True.
And
point.
If there were five parts of Henry the Sixth, I suppose we'd say parts one, two, three. But because these are individual plays, there will be many of them. The story goes on and on and on. So in the first three plays, we have the story of Hero, and then in the following plays, we examine the lives of the other characters and their offspring, if you will. You know, mm-hmm. So the play moves forward in time. So these are the first three parts.
All
of
right.
This.
Yeah. Okay. So there may be more.
God willing, and the roof don't leak. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, tell me a little bit about your cast and the casting process that you underwent.
Ooh. Oh, no. I don't know the answers to these questions.
Could be removed from it and not know. That's fine.
Exactly. But what I do know is Liz Diamond, who's a wonderful, wonderful director, I've known her for years. We've worked together over the years since really early on in my career. And she got the opportunity to direct this play at Yale, and then it was to be a co-production with ACT. It was very exciting. And what I did really is I said, while it's my play, it's your production. That's the kind of writer I am. I'm sort of, I do the best I can with the original production, and then I sort of release it back into the wild, or it's catch and release kind of. I very much enjoy watching what my colleagues around the country and around the world might do with it. So with this production, I did a lot of cheering from the sidelines, way the sidelines. I wasn't in the casting or anything like that. This in the original production, I always am. But in this one, I was very much like, you go, girl, you do it. And she's assembled an awesome group of actors, and they're doing a great job.
That's good to know. I'm sure you're relieved about that as well. Now, this is not just a heavy evening on a heady topic. It's being billed as funny and tragic, irreverently funny, with contemporary wordplay. So how are you doing that?
Oh, that sounds like, I believe that even in the most difficult times, even in the most difficult situations, some people might call them dark times and dark situations, although dark to me always means the color of my skin. But even in the most difficult times and the difficult situations, there are moments, many moments of humor, you know, and that is a strength. If we can live fully in the difficulty and yet find the joy in it too.
That's certainly the challenge of our time.
Well,
exactly.
This is a challenge of our times now. It was certainly the challenge of enslaved people, people who went through any difficult times, people going through difficult times around the world. The challenge to retain the joy of living while experiencing the difficulty. And so these enslaved people, of Father Comes Home from the Wars, they certainly have a lot of joy even while they're wrestling with very difficult problems.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of some of the wordplay that's mentioned? Kind of hard to put you on the spot there with your own writing.
I don't know. I don't know.
We'll leave it for the audience, so long we won't have any giveaways.
Okay.
We won't give away how it ends either. How's that? Well, let's hear some more music from Father Comes Home from the Wars, parts 1, 2, and 3. And with that, I will thank Susan Laurie Parks for taking some time today. And encourage people to catch the show. What are we going to hear?
Okay. We're going to get a song called Misplaced Myself, which refers to, specifically in the play, it talks about the dog, Oddsie Dog, that's run off. And it also, of course, refers to a slave who is tired of what their master has been doing, and they've reached the point where they go. They be looking high and low, they be looking in the trees, they be searching on the rivers, they be questioning the bees. I'm long gone, I ain't sitting on your shelf. I have misplaced myself. I have misplaced myself, yeah. I ain't working in your field, I ain't minding in your store, I ain't churning up your butter, you don't matter anymore. I'm long gone, I skipped town with all your wealth. I have misplaced myself. I have misplaced myself, yeah. And oh, I know you be missing me. And oh, here I go, sailing far from the devil across the deep blue sea. Oh yeah. I ain't leaving you no trail, I done went and broke my chain. You got everything to lose, I got everything to gain. I'm long gone, I ain't sitting on your shelf. I have misplaced myself. I have misplaced myself. I have misplaced myself. I have misplaced myself.
Composer, guitarist, Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, Susan Laurie Parks, from her production of Father Comes Home from the Wars, Parts 1, 2, and 3, a co-production with the Yale Repertory Theater at ACT's Geary Theater now through May 20th. I should mention that in connection with the play, ACT offers several interact events, many of which are presented free of charge, that give folks an opportunity to get closer to the action while having an entire night out at the theater. Tonight it's Tech Night, where you can join folks at a neighborhood bar for a happy hour with some drinks and hors d'oeuvres and mingle with the industry contacts and theater goers before going to the nearby Geary Theater. On May 1st, a prologue before the curtain goes up, you can get a sneak peek at the artistic process at this fascinating pre-show discussion with the director and artistic staff. Also, Theater on the Couch, with sponsored by Kaiser Permanente, audience exchanges out with ACT on Wednesday, May 9th, the best LGBT night in town. And a wine night with Wente Vineyards offering some wine tasting. All that and more as part of the production of Father Comes Home from the Wars, Parts 1, 2, and 3. Information at act-sf.org. Susan Laurie Parks, thanks again for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, it's interesting also that Susan Laurie Parks' play at the Geary, inspired by the Odyssey, is playing next door to the Currens' current offering, Head Over Heels, a new musical featuring the music of the Go-Go's, and an adaptation of Sir Philip Sidney's 16th century prose work, The Countess of Pembroke's Arcadia. Eternal themes, reinterpreted, both worth your time and making for a great night out at theater. ACT-SF.org for Father Comes Home from the Wars, Parts 1, 2, and 3, sfcurran.com for Head Over Heels. Links to those websites and those productions are at our website, the Open Air page at kalw.org. I'm David LaTulipe. You're listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio. Still to come, I'll be talking with conductor Christian Reif of the San Francisco Symphony. The conductor of the San Francisco Girls Chorus will also be here, Valerie Saint-Agathe, along with a composer associated with the Kronos Festival 2018. Well, next, a pleasure to welcome back to our studios Celia Fuchsil, who is very much involved with the Smuin's production of their final offering of the season. They conclude their 24th season with their dance series 2, which features a world premiere by internationally acclaimed choreographer Val Canaparoli, delightfully titled If I Were a Sushi Roll, a fascinating piece set to an equally fascinating neo-Baroque soundtrack by New York composer Nico Muli and Faroese singer-songwriter Taitur. Also on this program, works by Helen Pickett, with her sensual choreography set to a soaring score by an Emmy Award-winning composer, House of Cards composer Jeff Beal. And Amy Seward, Falling Up, set to the music of Brahms. It is indeed a pleasure to welcome back to Open Air Celia Fuchsil. As artistic director since 2007, Celia has led the vision of Smuin and fostered its reputation as San Francisco's premier contemporary American ballet company. Celia was Smuin's first dancer and has appeared on stages nationally, internationally, as well as on film and in television. As artistic director, Celia has expanded the repertoire of the company by commissioning more than 20 premieres, and from 2008 to 14, she also served as executive director of the company. Welcome back to Open Air, Celia.
Thank you, David. Great to be here.
Happy to have you. Boy, what an exciting program. We'll talk about Val Canaparoli's work in just a moment, but returning to the repertoire, Helen Pickett's work, let's start there. Tell us a little bit about Oasis, which returns to the repertory.
Fantastic. It is a great program, so diverse, three distinct pieces, and it's been just fabulous seeing Helen Pickett's Oasis again. It's driven by this lush score of Jeff Beal's. Sitting in the theater, you have the feeling that it's a rather cinematic score, and with all of his work in TV and movies, you feel that, and it shakes you to your core almost, and you feel enveloped by this incredible music, and it feels timely not only because of our concerns about the drought and our water, our precious resources, but also after the success of The Shape of Water. Did you have a chance to see that?
I did, yeah.
And it just has this feeling when the curtain goes up, and it's sort of this magical place that we enter into. And then to see the dancers whizzing across the stage at times. Sometimes it feels like they're floating underwater. And Jeff's score picks up elements of a storm, and then the raindrops right after a storm. And just your senses are really alive watching this piece, so it's beautiful to see.
Very nice. And Amy Seward's Falling Up with music set to music by Brahms.
Yes, yes. It's been delightful to see this again. A little bit bittersweet for us because this was the last piece she was working on when Michael Smuin passed away.
Oh, wow.
And Monday was 11 years since we lost Michael. Ah. So hard to believe, and it's we miss him terribly. We miss him every day, but he would be so amazed to see how his company continues and how it's thriving. And to see Amy Seward revisit this work, it's tempting for a choreographer to come back and tweak a ballet and make changes, because 11 years ago she was a different choreographer than she is today. But she stayed true to what she did then and tried to honor where she was at that point in her life. And it's a beautiful piece, very clean in its classical simplicity. At Yerba Buena, we have a live piano, so it's lovely to have that live accompaniment. We don't always get that at Smuin. So the dancers are certainly enjoying that. And it's for four couples, beautiful to see what she created with the lighting also. Amy's work is so sculptural, and with the lighting effect, it amplifies that. So it's a beautiful meditation, and to have these Brahms intermezzi played live is just a lovely way to open the show.
That's nice. Now, as artistic director, tell me a little bit about how you assembled this particular trio of works. You must have, I mean, you obviously have a broad palette of things that you could choose to put together and juxtapose. Mm-hmm. So how did these three particular works come up to make Dance Series 2 and the finale of this 24th season? Congratulations.
Thank you. Hard to believe, 24 years. Well, some things are driven by the length of the licensing agreement.
Oh, okay.
So when a ballet is licensed, or whether it's commissioned or licensed, there is a finite number of years that we have the rights to perform something. And so I wanted to perform Helen Pickett's ballet again before we lost the rights to it. Amy's ballet, we relicensed because we had commissioned that in 2007, and that license had expired, so we relicensed it. But I wanted Amy to be a part of this program, and now with news of Amy Seiwert's being named Sacramento Ballet's next artistic director.
Fantastic.
This concludes her time with us as choreographer in residence, although she will still have a world premiere next year for our 25th season.
Great.
We both agreed she had to be part of our 25th season, so she's finding the time in her new schedule as AD over there to join us. But
well, maybe we can get a double whammy from her then, when 25th season and when she's doing up in Sacramento, we'll have her on again.
That would be great. That would be great. So knowing those two pieces, the Brahms and with Jeff Beal's score for Oasis, I wanted to work again with Val Canaparoli. We had commissioned a ballet from him several years ago and had licensed other works of his. And the dancers just love working with Val. He is so engaging and very positive and reaffirming in the studio. And he's just really fearless. I love what he's done with his choreography. And at this stage of his career, he's not pigeonholed himself. He's really fearless to try different styles, and the dancers are just as willing to go right along with him and give him what he wants. And so he was...
And tell me about your association with Val.
Well, I knew Val since I was a young dancer at the San Francisco Ballet.
Oh, wow.
I've known Val a very, very long time. Oh. So more than 30 years. Just the other day when I was 17. But having Val back in the studio is a wonderful challenge and a great opportunity. And he loves working with the dancers as well. Like, we have a delightful company with 16 extraordinary dancers. And what they do on this program, one could walk into the theater and think they were seeing three distinct companies. That's how diverse and versatile these dancers are. And so what Val pulled out of them was just such fun. He came across this unique score by Nico Muhly, his Confessions album.
Yes, we have to talk about that. It's fascinating how this came together.
It is so fascinating. And Val was great because when I commissioned him, he said, well, what else is on the program? So he was very cognizant of selecting music that was not going to either mimic any of the other music or be too jarring.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's just perfect. It's just the perfect balance for the evening. I start the evening with the quiet piano with the Brahms and move into Val's and then finish with this full cinematic score of Jeff Beal's. But we've just really loved Val's process. When he found this music and the inspiration of it that Nico Muhly and his collaborator, Teeter, the singer from the Faroe Islands, were inspired by the random videos that people post on social media. And it was interesting that they called the album Confessions because there are so many random things that people post on social media today. Since it's become a thing, they are almost like confessions. And sometimes you wonder, do people realize that once they're out there forever, and watch what you post and watch what you share. And so throughout the ballet, it's a cutout of a, you see the sticker sometimes when people have videography whether for security or they let people know you are being videoed. So there's this omnipresent cutout of a video way up, flying high, up above stage right. And the whole ballet is taken from those pieces that have lyrics are taken from actual comments that people made in these videos. Random things like, I love the smell of my printer in the morning. So it's nonsensical, and yet it's become part of our lives.
Yeah, Nico Moly had mentioned that they're not confessions in a dirty way, but more like if you went over to a friend's house 10 minutes before they expected you and you got a glimpse into something private.
Exactly.
You know, so it's not necessarily, it's just everyday things that are just...
Yes, they're just random mundane things that that people feel are worth sharing. So,
and we are going to share a little bit of that music of Teitur Lassen, who goes by professionally by his first name Teitur, composer Nico Moly's music as well. We're going to hear Dog and Frog, I believe. So let's hear that, and then we'll conclude with the information, more information about the Smuens performances. Of some of the music of Nico Moly that will be featured as part of Smuen Ballet's Dance Series 2, the 20th to the 29th here in San Francisco, May 11th and 12th in Walnut Creek, May 24th and the 27th through the 27th in Mountain View, and then in early June in Carmel. We'll hear some of the wordplay in just a moment. I am David Latulippe talking with Celia Fischiel about Val Canaparoli's world premiere ballet, If I Were a Sushi Roll, a great title. And that title comes from one of the random videos that was come across by Teitur, singer-songwriter, in which a camera pans across people eating sushi at a sushi bar in Japan. So it's just ordinary events that are set to the words that people actually say on some of these videos. It should make for a fascinating presentation. Celia, anything else to share about the performances coming up? I should mention that the San Francisco performances are once again at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts on Howard Street. You've been dancing there for quite some time.
Quite some time. Our first performance was at Yerba Buena in March of 1994. So always great to be there again. We consider that our home theater, and it's a wonderful program. Hope everyone can come out.
Choreography again by Helen Pickett, as well as Amy Seiwert, the new Sacramento Ballet director, a longtime associate of Smuen. And we're going to hear now also from If I Were a Sushi Roll, music of Nico Moly. Don't I Know You from Somewhere? Celia, thanks for coming in. We'll have you in again soon.
Thank you, David.
Conversation. I to ask them a question. To answer me, too hungry and happy with their lives, busy soaking up the atmosphere. This restaurant with pictures of slinky fish on the wall, the sharp sound of knives, soy and ginger still in their nostrils. I would be in awe of their breath, their breath, their breath. I could hardly wait to be lifted into their mouths and get broken in two. Lie there melting somewhere between the sadness of their tongue and teeth. Don't I know you from somewhere? Don't I know you from somewhere? Don't I know you from somewhere?
Don't I Know You From Somewhere, from If I Were a Sushi Roll, music of Nico Mulli. Mulli's music described by Joshua Cosman as a trademark blend of Renaissance England and Glassian minimalism, making for a perfect partner for the sandpapery expressivity of Titor's singing. If I Were a Sushi Roll, Val Canaparoli's choreography as part of Dance Series 2, the Smuin Contemporary American Ballet Company, Celia Fushiel, Artistic Director. More information at smuinballet.org. Their performances here in San Francisco at the Yerba Buena Center, April 20th through the 29th. And then they're off to Walnut Creek, Mountain View, and Carmel. smuinballet.org for more information. Well, the Kronos Festival 2018, for which KALW is a media sponsor, gets underway tonight with already sold-out shows at SF Jazz for both tonight and tomorrow night. But Saturday presents a full day of concerts and activities that are scheduled, including an 11 a.m. family concert, Around the World with Kronos, which will feature a mix of eclectic and energetic music from across the globe. At 2 p.m., Amaranth Quartet plays Kronos 50 for the Future, an education and legacy project that was initiated by Kronos that distributes and commissions and distributes for free the first learning library of contemporary repertoire for string quartet. On the 2 p.m. program will be music by Garth Knox, as well as my next guest, Alexander Vrebralov, Nicole Lizet, and Rihanna Giddens, with an arrangement by Jacob Garchik. Also, another arrangement by Jacob Garchik. That's the 2 p.m. Kronos 2018. At 5 o'clock, the concert will feature David Coulter in Friends, which highlights the expansive sonic worlds of David Coulter, who serves as the festival's artist in residence, exploring soundscape on his performance on musical Saw and other instruments, along with keyboardist and composer Saba Amenikia and the electric guitar duo The Living Earth Show and others. And the concert concludes Saturday evening with a 7:30 concert, which features the vibrant and expressive San Francisco Girls Chorus, which joins Kronos Quartet to debut a new work by longtime collaborator Alexander Vrebalov. Here to talk about that concert is the aforementioned composer, Alexander Vrebalov, and the acclaimed director of the San Francisco Girls Chorus, Valerie Saint-Agathe. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course. There's a long-time collaboration that's been going on with composer Alexandra with Kronos. Tell us about how that started.
Well, that started in about 1995 when I came from Serbia to the San Francisco Conservatory to go to school. And I wrote my first string quartet being here in San Francisco, realizing at the same time that this is the home of Kronos. And, of course, I had heard of Kronos back there in my hometown where I went to school before that, but I never knew that they were based in San Francisco.
So, oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
So the coincidence was just beautiful, and I sent them my first quartet. And they called me, and we met, and that's how that just a large number of works came out of that one just beautiful coincidence.
So what brought you out to San Francisco?
I came to the San Francisco Conservatory and did my master's in composition with Eleanor Armour,
mm-hmm.
Who is a Bay Area composer and a great teacher.
And you're currently living in New York?
In New York.
Uh-huh. What is your New York experience like compared to San Francisco?
Well, what I liked about San Francisco was that it felt like I could encompass it in a way. You know, it's just the way it's very human, and the most beautiful thing about it was the amazing openness of people, which I, at that time, had thought was just how the whole country is, because that was my very first experience with the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And I do have that in New York, but I don't have the kind of nature that we have here in San Francisco.
It's a different coast, different folks, but all very interested in new music, and especially fantastic work with the Kronos Quartet that is, as you discovered in Serbia, is internationally
absolutely
appealing, and it's wonderful that you've had a chance to do more with them. Valerie Sentegat, you've had a very busy year with the San Francisco Girls Chorus. Congratulations on all the accolades that are heading your way.
Yes, thank you. It's true. It's an important year for the organization. And if I can say one word regarding the collaboration we have with Kronos, it's the third time, you know, that we've been working with Kronos. We've been part of the festival. And, you know, this year is especially important because we arrive at the end of the fifth year, you know, where we had our artistic director, Lisa Bielawa, who is actually leaving this year. And after those 5 years, we actually now have a repertoire where we can, you know, show all the work we've been doing towards, you know, contemporary music, changing a little bit the repertoire for those young women. And the piece written by Alexandra, so not only for this year, but we already performed one of her piece, Bubbles, with Kronos, that we had, you know, the opportunity to record. We just released our CD this year on Philip Glass label, and Bubbles is part of it. So it's just wonderful and exciting to arrive after those 5 years of collaboration with Lisa and be able to present that.
Mm-hmm. We're going to hear Bubbles shortly, previous collaboration with the Kronos. Tell us about this new collaboration. How did that come about, and did you have to help Alexandra fine-tune it for the chorus?
Oh, no, I didn't have to help Alexandra at all. I mean, and it's interesting to see how the girls, they immediately click, you know, to her music, because they performed Bubbles before. In this new piece, Missa Supratex, they just recognize some of her language. And Alexandra knows how to write for those young women. I mean, not only in terms of range, she knows exactly what works with those kind of voices, which are not adult voices, women adult, but teenagers. So they're between the children voice and the adult voice. It's a very interesting color and interesting resonance. And by the chords that she's going to choose and how to bring them together, we're going to have a special resonance, really. And so she also had, I'm talking like if you weren't there, you know,
but feel free to chime in.
You know, right? Yeah. And she also has this ability of asking from them to give their energy as teenager, to find their fierceness. And so, no, I didn't have to help anything. She just knew.
Well, Alexandra, you must have, I mean, Eastern Europe has such a rich tradition of women's voices. Did that help you in having in your mind's ear, so
well,
to speak, that sound?
I sang in choirs as I was growing up, so that helped. But I think more than anything, the fact that I have three sisters and four nieces and nieces are teenagers, and just that kind of energy that's just overwhelming and so powerful if unlocked in a way that's creative and really inspires fearlessness in them. So musically it was a little bit of learning what exactly they can do. But I think, as Valerie said, it's really about the energy and how they're open and ready to explore things in the language that is not so common and is actually pretty new for them, some of it.
That's longtime Kronos collaborator Alexandra Vrebolov. Two programs will feature her music for Kronos 2018. Also on the Saturday evening program, music by Oakland-based composer Zachary Watkins, inspired by the moment Mahalia Jackson prompted Martin Luther King to go off script during his I Have a Dream speech. Also joined by artist-in-residence David Coulter for Saturday evening's performance. KLW has three pairs of complimentary tickets as media sponsor. If you'd like tickets to Saturday evening's 7:30 performance at SF Jazz, give us a call right now in studio, 415-841-4134. 415-841-4134 to hear the incredible San Francisco Girls Chorus featuring the music of Alexandra Vrebolov, both of whom I thank, Valerie Santagat, for coming in, and Alexandra.
Thank you.
A little bit of your previous collaboration, Bubbles, music of Alexandra Vrebolov, performed by the San Francisco Girls Chorus with the Kronos Quartet and Andy Meyerson on vibraphone. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
415-841-4134 for tickets for Saturday evening's Kronos 2018 festival performance. Music of Alexandra Vrebolov. Tickets have been claimed for Saturday evening's performance of the Kronos 2018 Festival. Well, for a few concerts that were originally to be conducted by Charles Dutoit, now added to the list of those fallen from grace, the San Francisco Symphony turned to someone to replace him in their own stable, the rising young conductor Christian Reif, now doing so much more than his official position of conductor of the Symphony's Youth Orchestra. For the program that he inherited, he'll be conducting tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday Gustav Holst's The Planets, with ethereal vocal supplement by the women of the San Francisco Symphony Chorus, a timely programming of Siegfried's Rhine Journey from Götterdämmerung, on the cusp of the full ring from across the street at Grove Street at the Opera House, and Franz Liszt's Second Piano Concerto with soloist Jean-Eflamme Bevoudet. I caught part of the symphony's rehearsal Tuesday and then talked with Christian Reif afterwards backstage at Davies Symphony Hall. Here's that conversation. Maestro, thanks so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to speak with me once again.
Of course, I'm happy to.
Well, congratulations on the fantastic response to the March Youth Symphony concert. Is that an appointment for a set amount of time?
Yes, so it's a 3-year contract. This is my second season, so next year will be my third and maybe last. We don't know yet, but it's a joy to work with them. I'm happy to be here.
Your career has made such a rapid fire progression, as you're now in your second season, as you mentioned, as conductor of the Youth Orchestra in Miami just 2 years ago with the New World Symphony, now being in the right time and place to slip into a symphony subscription concert with the San Francisco Symphony, and still having room to step in for Joana Carneiro and the Berkeley Symphony in January, participating in the terrifically innovative Soundbox series, also played piano for the Reimagine End of Life Symposium. Now, is it just a matter of never saying no, or what?
It's hard to say no sometimes, especially if there are these incredible opportunities. And I love making music. But of course, you need to be, you know, to guard your time and be clear in what you can do. But it's been great so far, and I'm happy for all of these opportunities.
Do you have an official coffee sponsor?
No, I don't. I don't actually drink coffee that much. I do drink coffee. I enjoy it, but I don't need it every day.
Well, this program, Holst, Wagner, Liszt on the program, Liszt Second Piano Concerto with Jana from Beauvoisin. Have you worked with him before?
Not yet, no, but I just met him. He's a wonderful guy and a great, great musician. So I'm really looking forward to making music with him.
And as a pianist, are you fairly familiar with the Liszt Second?
Yes, I mean, I've never played it before. And there's so many piano concerti, obviously, in the repertoire that I don't know every single one of them yet. But no, it's been a joy working on it and getting to know it now.
It's interesting. I just learned that Liszt was quite a reviser himself. This went through years and years of fine-tuning over the years.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
And we're now in the definitive version, I guess, since he can no longer revise it.
Right. Yeah, it would be a little hard now.
I recently performed the Holst Planets with the Peninsula Symphony. Amazing work. And I was always amazed at the orchestral color and the character that Holst captures in each of the planets. And I remember being excited discovering the work as a teenager and listening to the LP in a darkened bedroom and just imagine seeing these actual planets, which I thought he really had so captured back in 1912 before these modern telescopic images. And then...
I mean, it's true. I mean, there are obviously these images of planets in one's head when you listen to it. But for me, it's much more about the human experience. And he himself thought of it more as astrological
than
astronomical. Exactly. So it's more about the characters or the zodiac signs. And he's ingenious at writing different characters in his music. And so every single movement, every planet, so to speak, is a different character. And you find some of them in the subtitles, you know, in the Bringer of War and the Beauty and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Much of an astrology aficionado yourself or not?
No, not quite. But obviously I've read up on it now. And it's such a massive, genius piece. It's an epic, really. And he traces, in my opinion, he traces the every character of humanity from, you know, the willfulness, from the violence of the first movement of Mars, but brings so much beauty and tenderness and humor and joy. And then the last movement, not the last movement, the fifth movement, the Saturn, Bringer of Old Age, is really a movement where where one needs to come to terms with one's old age and has to, and it's almost as if he tells a story in this one movement, where the music goes from the depths of the orchestra at the end until the very high notes of the orchestra. So as to, you know, the spirit gives way to a higher being and goes to heaven. And there in the middle, there's these alarm bells sounding as the last judgment day or whatever. Now it's time, you know, but then you have...
Maybe
this,
a pacemaker or something.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's nothing. Yeah. But then there's this gorgeous, and these incredible pieces afterwards, also Uranus and Neptune, so much fun and bumbling wizard kind of movement, and then the mysticism of Neptune, which is something that has not been done before, not been written before. Mm. It's quite astonishing.
And as a flutist, such amazing flute writing.
Oh my God! Yeah, yeah. No, his whole orchestration is amazing. I mean, he uses a big number of winds as well, so that he can really play with all the different colors of the woodwinds and be in one area of sound and colors and go to the next one seamless and have everyone contribute.
And no Pluto, of course, because this was written in 1916 and Pluto wasn't even discovered until 1930, and they'd probably have to cut the movement anyway once Pluto was undiscovered.
that's right. I'm not quite sure whether I heard that there's some kind of installment of Pluto. I'm not sure. Yeah, I get confused now.
He's a different satellite planet or some
right,
sort of different
exactly.
terminology. The big timely inclusion of music from Götterdämmerung as your esteemed neighbors across the street gear up for the full ring cycle. Yeah. We'll hear Siegfried's Rhine Journey. Operatic ambitions on your front? Do you want to be in the pit someday doing a full Götterdämmerung?
Absolutely. I would love that. I love working with singers, and I've done so a bit. I haven't done much opera yet, but I will do some more next season and in Opera San Jose. And I work with my fiance, Julia Bullock, every once in a while. So we're doing Mahler 4 in the summer, which I'm really looking forward to. Yeah, so absolutely, I would love to do more opera in the future.
And just hearing the tail end of the rehearsal and hearing some of the Siegfried's Rhine Journey, such amazing leitmotifs that come back, these just little snippets. We hear a little bit of the Valkyrie theme. We hear the love theme.
The whole piece is full of drama, obviously. And his music, Wagner's music, is so easy to follow because he takes those leitmotifs and you instantly have a recognition and instantly have a character in mind, whether it's Siegfried, whether it's Brünnhilde, whether it's the ring and so forth, or even a heroic motif of youth or, you know, joy of Wanderlust, traveling and so forth. And the piece that we are playing is almost almost a summary of the prologue to Götterdämmerung. So it starts just after the three Norns vanish, the three old century-old ladies, wise ladies, and then we hear the dawn in the sunrise in the orchestra, and just these little snippets of sound and the nature waking up, and then it goes into full bloom, and Brünnhilde and Siegfried are in passionate embrace, and then Siegfried is Brünnhilde sends him off to a journey. That's where we hear the horn call outside as well, and it's a brilliant piece of drama.
Mm. Thank you, Aunt Brünnhilde, he says as he goes away.
Yeah. Right. Well, we're not going to go into that.
Well, you've been so adept at stepping in for people at the last minute. Keep your score study up. You never know if Donald Runicles might catch a cold.
That's right. But they have a lot of great opera staff, music staff at the opera, too. So I doubt that the call will come to me first. So.
The family concert is coming up right on the heels of this concert. Again, later in May, another family concert, along with a great opportunity to showcase the Youth Symphony for their 35th anniversary. Something special must be planned for that.
Oh, yeah. For the 35th anniversary, we were planning to play the Rite of Spring, and they're killing it. It's amazing. I mean, they're so pumped up to play it, and it's a great, I mean, obviously a great piece of music, very, very difficult.
Well, you've primed the pump with some Hans von der Hense.
That's true. I try to challenge them every concert and push them a little bit further, and so far they've always excelled at it.
The very busy Christian Reif backstage at Davies Symphony Hall, recorded earlier. For more about his performances tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday, as well as the upcoming family concerts of the symphony and the forthcoming 35th anniversary of the Youth Symphony, visit sfsymphony.org. Also on the symphonic front this weekend, you may have heard on our airwaves that we're a media sponsor for the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony, which continues its 10th anniversary season on Saturday in the Herbst Theater. Music of June Bonacich with the Brashears Trio, very young, wonderful string trio of siblings. Also, Ravel's Mother Goose Suite and Dvorak's Symphony No. 8. We have four pairs of tickets to that concert, 8 o'clock at the Herbst Theater on Saturday. 415-841-4134 for tickets to the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony, Saturday evening at 8, the Herbst Theater. 415-841-4134. Well, that's Open Air for this final Thursday of the month here on KLW. Our shows are archived at klw.org. You can send a show suggestion to me, David at klw.org. My thanks to Niels Swinkels for producing the show.